Right now, new and returning vidIQ customers can buy 1 month of vidIQ and get the second month free. This offer is going on until July 31st and can be used towards a purchase of either a pro or boost level account. All you have to do is visit vidIQ.com/bonus. If you've been looking to unlock our full suite of tools, now is a great time. You have until July 31st, vidIQ.com/bonus. Welcome back to the Tube Talk Podcast. My name is Dan Carson, and generally, Rob would be joining me for this intro, but unfortunately, he had to go out this week before we can actually sit down and record it. So I'm not really going to waste a whole lot of your time today getting to today's guest. What's really cool about our guest today is they've actually managed to grow a Minecraft YouTube channel. They did so in a lot of the same ways channels have grown in the past. They've made videos showcasing tips and tutorials. They've made Let's Play content, and a lot of it has kind of followed the same guidelines we've told gaming channels time and time again on how to grow. To grow a channel like this today, you need to know who your audience is, and you need to provide them some value. And our guest today has been doing just that. They're over 100,000 subscribers to the Minecraft channel, and I think you're, especially if you're a gaming channel, but even if you're not, I think you'll be very encouraged by hearing their story.
Welcome to Tube Talk, the show dedicated to helping you become a better video creator so you can get more views, subscribers, and build your audience. Brought to you by vidIQ. Download for free at vidIQ.com.
Nick Farzi, welcome to the Tube Talk podcast. Thank you so much for being here.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about you and your channel.
So me and my channel, when I was growing up, I loved the game Minecraft. And when I was a young kid, I was watching a lot of Let's Play YouTubers, like the old classic ones. And as I got older, I decided I wanted to, you know, go into this kind of space and try video making myself. And as you can probably expect, it didn't go well at first, but over the course of, I want to say like 8 years now and a few channels later, I'm now doing what I love and making hopefully good content.
So if anyone out there couldn't guess, this will be a rather gaming and Minecraft-centric episode. I'm sure that anyone listening, though, could probably pull some tidbits of advice if they're not a gaming channel, but I do apologize. This happens from time to time.
Yeah, let's do Leviathan. Yeah. So Farzi, I'm going to say right now, not another Minecraft channel. So how do you make yourself unique and different to all of the other Minecraft channels, which has resulted in 100,000 plus subscribers? And I'm seeing here nearly 30 million views. So pre-congratulations on that.
Appreciated. I would definitely say for being unique in such a saturated genre or niche, rather, you really just want to focus on your brand and what you're good at. So, for example, there's tons of people that are really good at like redstone in the game. They're good at building in the game. But the thing that I really focus on is me being engaging, entertaining, and being like a role model to my younger audience. So I'm not necessarily making the best Minecraft content out there, but I'm making sure if you find me, I'm going to hook you in. You're going to have a really fun time watching me.
So what I wanted to ask you was, who was the initial inspiration for your channel? You did mention that you kind of grew up watching these other Let's Players. You said the classics. Can you drop some names for us?
Oh boy, I'm sure most people here are too young to know this, or hopefully not at least. My favorites growing up were Captain Sparkles, Tom Syndicate, and Tobuscus, if you guys know any of those names.
I do personally, but I don't know if anyone worth mentioning. I mean, these were really big channels at the time. I'm not sure where any of them are today. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've kept up with any of them, but I feel like Minecraft and the YouTubers within it have turned over a few times because the game is, you know, over 10 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about Tommy Innit and Dream,
yes,
and folks like that kind of taking up the spotlight there. So I was looking at your channel. Your oldest video was from 5 years ago. Typical Minecraft Let's Play series. And I just got to ask, 5 years ago, okay, and you hit 100K, I feel like, pretty recently, and I got to say, kind of quick, right? Like, you had a spurt of growth. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Oh, yes, a very big spurt.
So I have a couple questions about that. My first one would be, what kept you going for 5 years?
Well, I really, really just enjoyed the game, and that was the biggest thing for me. I wasn't doing a chore most of the time. I was just playing a game I liked, and I made videos about it. Now, I did take a break in between for like 6 months at one point. Just I got sick of it. But then I kind of realized, you know, that's not how you grow a channel. So I came back. But overall, I just love what I do. And that's good advice for anyone making videos. Don't pick a topic just because it's popular. Pick something that you can do for the long haul and you really enjoy making videos on.
That would probably be the most important bit of advice. And I feel like with games, people see these trends pop up and they say, well, games only last so long, so I got to be willing to be versatile. I got to be flexible and I got to jump on trends. And then you find yourself playing games you might not normally play because, well, it's trending right now. This Among Us thing's really big, so I should probably jump on it, even though I'm not into this game, you know? And I feel like anyone could probably relate to that at some point or another, depending on what it is they do in their channel. You managed to stick to Minecraft, though. So you have a Minecraft channel through and through. Just for any Minecrafters out there, you're not somebody who's gone out and said, well, Minecraft is fun, but I'm gonna adjust the channel a little bit and play some Stardew for a while and see how that goes.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I have no interest in changing. And honestly, one thing I should even note further about the Minecraft community is there's a lot of like segments in the Minecraft community. So there's people that are doing, you know, SMPs, which is survival multiplayer, people doing, you know, like redstone videos. So I'm not just doing all of Minecraft. I took like an exact slice in there, me being the entertaining let's play content / tutorial content. And I'm kind of diving right into there.
Yeah. So you're carving yourself out a niche within a niche, and certain games, Minecraft being one of them, are great for that. Tell us a little bit about the growth though now, because that's what really got my attention. You are over 100,000 subscribers now. I think 135,000,
correct? Right?
So what was the growth spurt? When did this happen? Like, where were you and what happened to get you to 100K?
Well, when I hit 50K, things were pretty normal. I was slowly growing, getting a little bit quicker with my growth, but overall nothing crazy. Then I started getting a lot of traction on older videos, and the reasons to me are still unknown. I just had a big spurt of views from normal traffic sources, but just lots of them. And what I did from there is I just tried to double down on that kind of content. So make more engaging tutorials, make more let's play content that had some sort of inherent value, and just continue to double down on that kind of stuff. And the growth has just skyrocketed. And maybe there's some things I'm missing. Maybe something is not right. But for me, it's been pretty smooth. Nothing crazy has changed since this growth spurt.
Interesting. Let's investigate that a little bit more then. So how old were the videos when they started to, I guess, gain more traction? How long have they been on YouTube?
Oh, it's been all sorts of different time frames, like videos from a year, maybe even two ago, videos from weeks to months ago. Just a lot of my past videos just decided to blow up for whatever reason.
And was it a theme or a trend of videos, whether it be tutorials, challenges, or did it literally just seem like YouTube had decided, I'm going to start testing out the Farsi channel now with a new audience with whatever videos are available?
Definitely the latter. It seemed so peculiar to me. I thought there were bots involved. I thought there was some external traffic issue going on, but those issues, at least in my head, got put to rest. I did some more research on, you know, the analytics, but it was very random.
And what was the traffic source, if there was one in particular that was driving this? Was it browse, suggested, search?
It was a lot of browse, and a few of the videos had a lot of channel pages, but the external, almost nothing, like 1% or less. So very strange.
And the final question in my interrogation is, when did this happen? Like, was it end of 2020, beginning of end of 2019? Sorry, end of 2020, beginning of 2021. I'm really curious on a time frame there.
I want to say over the past 3 months in particular.
Oh, really? So as recent as that? So we're talking, you know, to date this podcast, we're talking March, April, and May of 2021.
Exactly. I'd say around March.
I was trying to see if there was a correlation between YouTube Shorts and Minecraft Shorts being very popular, and then just Minecraft again blowing up as a general topic. But it doesn't sound like any of these things. It sounds like one of those moments where, you know, you as a creator have been putting in the hard yards for years and years and years, been putting out good content, and now finally YouTube has found the audience for your content, and you're capitalizing now on what YouTube is telling you is the right content for your audience, which all sounds like a very nice algorithmic present.
It does. It sounds great.
I want to be a little bit careful, though, Rob, because one thing we have to combat a lot, I think, is this notion that a lot of people out there think this is exactly what needs to happen to them, right? They feel like they need to get lucky. That's all it is. I'm going to keep doing exactly what I've always done. I'm not going to make any changes, and I'll get lucky. Farsi
true,
did,
true.
You know, and there's always something to that. And my question for you, Farsi, is, and I know we're just kind of like picking your channel apart without being able to see it. For the audio listeners, we're not looking at the channel right now, so you're not missing anything. I'm just curious, was there a newer video that you posted in the last few months that did better than you expected, or just better than normal on the channel?
Oh, yeah. I get those from time to time. It's usually very searchable, SEO-friendly tutorials. So very straightforward, less than 8-minute videos. And I had one, actually, I want to say about 4 weeks ago. It got a lot of views, probably close to like, I think it was close to 50,000 in a time frame where I'm usually getting like 10 to 15,000. And that happens sometimes, but that's the most recent example I can think of.
Right. So, because my theory on this whole thing is that you did this to your channel. You were creating content. You're learning as you go, getting better and better, getting better at thumbnails. I encourage anyone to go look at Farsi's channel. It will be linked in the show notes. And you can just see the thumbnail evolution over time. And I think when your newer videos started targeting the right people, then YouTube was, once they got through those videos, starting to recommend your older content. And this is me just kind of riffing right now. I don't know any of this, but this is just how I feel. And that's because, like, lately I found myself going through like Mr. Beast videos, right? And I've watched all the recent ones. And every so often, YouTube will push me an older one, especially because he hasn't been uploading a whole lot lately. So I'm getting his very old content recommended to me. And I wonder if that's what's happening here with your older videos being recommended to an audience that has already been starting to like bond with you. But then, you know, when they get through all of your videos, YouTube's like, you seem to like this guy. Maybe here's some older stuff. Here's some classic Farsi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I honestly hope that's all it is. Because there are some weird things. I don't want to, you know, take the podcast in a whole different conversation.
No, please do.
There are some weird analytics being shown with those videos that really blew up, like the older ones. Like, for example, a lot of them have a lot less impressions than views, which makes no sense unless it's external, but it's not. So that sounds all awesome and dandy, but at the same time, there are some weird signs on my channel that I still can't really put the pieces together on.
Does that mean that the click-through rate is very high on those videos?
No, the click-through rate hasn't actually changed. It's almost like YouTube's recognizing they're not like real views or something of that nature, but they're still appearing as views. It's very strange.
Mm. Mm.
That, yes. I remember you telling me this like a few weeks ago, because we were chatting on Twitter and you were saying, I think I'm getting botted. You'd mentioned that earlier. You said you're doing some investigating, though, and I think you were even on the horn with YouTube, because YouTube partners, for anyone who doesn't know, they have access to, you know, contacting support. So I haven't followed up with you, and we can cut this out if you don't want it included, but have you learned anything from them? Your mind has been put at ease, basically. What were the steps there that put it at ease?
Well, I reached out to creator support, and they basically told me they're going to look into it. They're going to remove any, you know, spam subscribers if they find any. But I haven't seen much of a change. And the reason I'm, you know, a little bit relaxed about this now is because it's been 2, maybe 3 months. And I figure if it was a big deal to them, they would have, you know, taken some action now. The fact that it's been this long and they don't really seem to care too much about this, I'm like, all right, I guess it's not that big of a deal to them. Maybe there's some explanation for this.
Hmm. Well, older videos aside, your content today is doing very well. You are... like we said, over 100,000 subscribers now, and you're getting thousands of views on every video. So success.
Yeah, success.
This episode of Tube Talk is brought to you by the vidIQ mobile app. You can download it for free on the Android or iOS app stores. And it's here to help you do things like keep track of your competition, research your next video idea, optimize videos you've already posted, and more, all on the go. This is the perfect app to have literally in your back pocket while you're out and about and you find yourself with a few free extra minutes. Having the opportunity to sit down and optimize your latest video or research ideas for your upcoming video can be a game changer and save you a bunch of time as you work to create more YouTube content. Again, you can download the vidIQ mobile app for free on Android or iOS. Just search for vidIQ. Let's talk a little bit about the channel and the transition into where it is now. Specifically, you must look at your channel and consider it kind of like a brand and or a business at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
When did you start looking at your channel that way?
That's a great question. I want to say probably by the time I hit like 10 to 20,000 subscribers, because that's when I realized like, okay, I can grow this thing. I can increase my Google AdSense. I can maybe get some partnerships at some point. But before that, this was just literally a hobby.
I'm bringing that up because I think it's so important for creators out there to, if they're serious about growing a YouTube channel, to look at their channel as a business whenever necessary. I mean, and having a channel is a hobby, and if, you know, that's awesome. Plenty of people do that and they get a lot of fulfillment out of that. But for those who want to grow, for those who have ambitions of going full time, even when you're not full time, you should probably pretend like you are, treat it like a business. So are you full time at this point?
Right now I am, but that being said, my expenses are not, you know, I don't have a lot of expenses, so this is okay for me, but I'm sure in the future I would need to grow a little bit more before I could, you know, be full time for a long time.
Do you feel as if you've maximized your business opportunities yet? Or like, are you still feel as if you're developing, let's say, your brand deal, sponsorships, merch, that type of thing?
Oh, I'm absolutely not there yet, because I have yet to strike a brand deal yet or a sponsorship. I've done merch, but besides that, I've only done AdSense. So I'm hoping I can get into that in the next year or so to come.
Well, I'm guessing with the numbers you've been pumping out these last couple of months, your media kit is now going to look a lot more enticing to potential sponsorships and whatnot. Because I just saw you did like 9 million views in the last month. I just noticed on the data here, which is pretty incredible.
I know, it's insane.
When would you say, like, for other channels, you said about 10,000 subscribers, that was the benchmark for you. For anyone else out there, let me ask it this way. Do you feel like you should have started looking at your channel as a business or a brand even earlier?
Absolutely. I was very late to the party. I think as soon as I had a recurring audience, people that enjoyed my content, or I had some kind of searchability with some videos, I should have started building on that a lot more rapidly, as opposed to what I did, where I didn't post that often. My thumbnails were not very enticing at all. So I think it's important very early on to, you know, as you said, start taking it seriously.
So another part of this, when you're turning your channel into a business, is YouTube gives us tools other than AdSense. We have memberships, and you are, in fact, utilizing those. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? You know, how is that going? Do you feel like you're overburdened with the benefits you need to now provide to these members when they subscribe? How's it going for you?
It's funny you mentioned that last part, because when I first did memberships, I had these really, I don't want to say annoying, but the rewards were things that I had to physically do, whether that be hop on a call with someone,
oh, or dear,
play with them or something, which was great. It was a fun way to engage with the community. But I realized shortly after that, people that signed up for it, they were having to wait a while because either I forgot or I was behind schedule. So I quickly changed it to things that are automated, and now things are going great with it.
Yeah, scalability, eh? That's something that all business owners soon hit the wall with very, very quickly.
What sort of perks, just for example's sake, what sort of perks are you offering members that you feel are scalable now compared to what you were doing?
Right now, my first perk is very simple. They get custom emotes, custom icons. I just took the basic YouTube perk and labeled that as perk number one. On top of that, it's very simple things for me. It's like a follow on social media, or like a one-on-one like message in a chat room where we can talk and ask questions. But it's nothing that requires more than 15 minutes of my time.
Have you, and this is a very specific Minecraft question, but have you considered starting a Minecraft server?
I did that and it went horribly. So I shut it down.
Why did it go horribly? I have personal experience with this. I know why it went horribly for me. I just want to know from you, why did that go so bad?
So for those who don't know, in the Minecraft space, when you make a server, anyone can join, like with the basic rules enabled, they can join, do whatever they want. So unless you have these systems put in place to prevent people, you know, just causing havoc on your server, people will do some awful things and they will, I'll leave it at that. They'll do some bad things that won't be good for your server. So that happened to me a lot.
It's so much to manage that stuff too. You have people coming in, you got to give them access to it. And you would think, even though they're paying to be there, I'm assuming this was a membership perk, even though they're paying to be there, they behave. And sometimes it's not the case. Sometimes they feel invincible because they're giving you money. I'm your paying member, you know, so you're not going to kick me.
100%.
Sorry that happened.
Okay, it's a funny story to tell now.
I've completely been there because Minecraft is where I started. It's not a very little known fact about me. So you have memberships. You got ad revenue. Full time. Rob's going to say something.
Yeah, I just want to jump into memberships a little bit more, Dan, because I don't think we've talked about this much on the podcast yet. So, Farzi, if you don't mind answering this question, a channel of over 100,000 subscribers, how many members do you have?
I don't have many. I think I have 8 or 10.
Okay, so yeah, that's the kind of where I was going with this in terms of, you know, just because you get memberships available, I think at like 10,000 subscribers, immediately opening that up as a revenue opportunity, you know, your channel might not necessarily be ready for that just yet. And you have three tiers here. You know, there's quite a difference between them, $2 a month, $5 a month, $25 a month. Are those members spread around the tiers or are they just naturally going for the cheapest one?
I believe out of the 8 to 10, I want to say 6 or 7 are on that first tier, which is understandable because it's the most affordable.
Yeah. So I guess for you at this point, memberships is very much an experimental thing to see if there is a potential market for that right now. Have you thought about how you're maybe going to encourage more people to sign up through calls to action, or are you just for the moment seeing if it's a viable part of your channel?
So I treat memberships the same way I treat donations on live streams, and that is I never encourage it. I don't want people to think right. that they have to pay me to, you know, get in good with me, make me feel like I'm entertained with them. I want them to say if they want to, you know, help supply me with my financial obligations, I'm all for it. But overall, I just want them to enjoy the content they're watching.
The memberships, I'm glad you asked that, Rob, because I didn't know if Farzi even wanted to go there. But yeah, thank you for sharing that. So memberships aren't the biggest part of the channel right now, although that can always change in the future. But despite that, you've managed to take your channel full time. Have you gotten to the stage where you're actually hiring help to do various tasks on your channel?
Yes, I'm actually hiring an editor right now, which I've had for about a year now, and she has absolutely made my life so much easier. And I would definitely say, if it's within your budget, if you can afford it, if you think your content needs a little bit of help, having someone else outsource the, you know, kind of tedious job of editing, it helps my creative process so much because I have way more time to think of ideas, test things, and just have time for myself.
What does the editor get from you? Do you just like do a screen recording for 50 minutes and then the instruction is turn this into a 4-minute tutorial? Or yeah, I'm just curious on the idea of, you know, giving up the control of something that you've been doing for a few years, because this is something that I'm wrestling with right now. How long does it take really for, I guess, the creator and the editor to get in sync in terms of, yeah, you're making this content exactly how I would make it or how I want you to make it?
Yeah, so we go really in depth. We share a Google Doc and I have like 3 columns on this doc. I have the video name and the date it's posted. I have notes about the video and the series. Then I have specific editing requests. And I fill all this out, not essays, but a couple of sentences for each one, especially on the editing requests. And that's how we work. Now, for getting in sync, I say you need to have at least a month. And a good example is right now myself, I'm hiring a new editor to be working at the start of August. And I've already started training him this past week. And for the whole month, we're going to do test videos and, you know, get on the same page. Because I would say if you throw them in and say, make this video good, they might make it good, but it definitely is not going to be your style unless they're really, really good with their editing and their observation skills.
Are you scaling here then? Is this your second editor or are you switching from one to another?
I'm just switching. The one editor system for me has been working great with my upload schedule.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. So I was going to ask that too, because it's great for anyone who's thinking about, I want to hire an editor, but how would that even work? It's great to have like a concept in mind, like, oh, I would just send them the raw files and then some instructions. A lot of people out there do use different tools, like you said, Google Docs, to collaborate and, you know, keep notes and things like that. I know some people out there, they'll actually cut their audio themselves. They'll do like a pre-cut and send the editor that, and then the editor spruces it up. So they'll do the part that doesn't necessarily take that long, and it leaves them, you know, they don't need to explain everything in a Google Doc vaguely. They can just put it together and say, jazz this up, please. And a lot of people work that way too. So there's a lot of different ways you can do this. I don't want to get into specifics, you know, for privacy's sake, but about what kind of budget would you recommend somebody have on hand if they wanted to hire an editor? Or do you not want to go there?
That's totally fine to talk about. In fact, I have good experience with this because I've been very over the top with interviews for editors and, you know, just totally interrogating them to, like, you know, pick their brain and whatnot. And the biggest thing I've seen for making content like I do, which is semi well edited, not amazing, but definitely above average, is the budget is around $40 to $50 per video. Now, you can do hourly, you could, you know, pay more, get more edits, pay less, a little bit lazier edits, but overall, $40 to $50 is what every editor to me has said is fair.
Let's say pre-editor, Farzi. On average, how long did it take you to make a video?
So I do two kinds of content. I do shorter tutorials that are SEO friendly. Then I do a Let's Play series, which is more of a engagement, entertaining kind of series. For the tutorials, very simple, straightforward, hour maximum. For my Let's Play series, since there's a lot of content, a lot of raw footage, that would take me a while. A well-edited Let's Play video that's like 20 minutes long, probably 3 hours to edit. And that's time that I will never get back.
I'm throwing my hands in the air here because, like, I've just finished editing a 7-minute video and it's taken me around about 7 hours. So I'm just in a completely different world of video making. But my follow-up question is now, so how much time have you saved? Like, you know, a previous 3-hour, 20-minute video edit, it's literally now you just record for 20 minutes. I don't know, maybe 30 minutes filling out that little edit request form and that's it. Or is it more or less?
So the recording takes a while, and I should actually clarify that. The reason that my editing, I mean, not at your level of length, but for me, it took so long because I have a lot of footage. Like for a 20-minute video, I'm sitting at my desk recording for like 4 or 5 hours, and I'm trying to get, you know, the best footage I can. I would say I definitely saved a lot of time with this editor for that. But when it comes to shorter videos, if you're doing, like, again, SEO-friendly quick tutorials, I don't need the editor for that. That was probably not my best financial interest. But for longer videos, absolutely, it saved me so much time.
Farzi, let's shift gears a little bit and discuss something that I think a lot of folks out there have seen time and time again. Just the general mistakes that you feel a lot of Minecraft channels, gaming channels, or even if you feel like it relates to all channels, like a lot of mistakes they're making when they're starting out on YouTube. Because I'm sure a lot of people listening who are considering starting a channel, or maybe they're just getting started, they, you know, don't want to wait 5 years to get their silver play button. Congratulations, by the way. So let's just start broadly. What are like the top 3 mistakes you think people make when they start out a Minecraft channel?
I think absolutely number one is people try and do too many different kinds of things. I know this is a very debated topic by some people. I think number one, the best way to grow on YouTube, especially in the gaming niche, is you need to do one kind of thing, like one thing within your niche, a niche within a niche within a niche. Get really good at that, grow, and then as you go on further, as you get a bigger audience, then you can kind of branch out, try some trends. But a lot of people, they start out doing, I mean, let alone Minecraft, other game. But even worse than that, or not worse, but, you know, another option for that is Minecraft tutorial, Let's Play, animation, you know what I mean? All these different avenues. Stick to one thing, grow that way.
Do you think somebody in Minecraft should develop a mod whereby if you dig deep enough, you find a niche block?
It would certainly help the YouTube space.
I'm glad that joke worked. I found my niche.
If I don't find my niche, the video ends.
There you go, yeah.
New trend.
Or a speed niche run as well. We could do that. Who finds their niche first?
So you had mentioned that people kind of bounce around, even within a topic, they can bounce around too much, from tutorials to Let's Plays. Now, those are the two things you said you do. So let's turn back now. How are you doing those things differently? And I know I've seen your videos. You have a very particular style, but can you break that down for everybody?
Well, let's be clear here. I am not perfect. When I started my channel, it was definitely not a smart move to do those two things hand in hand, because one of them got a lot more views than the other one, and it just was not, the audiences were not the same. That being said, now I've kind of learned to hedge what's not working more into my favor. So a good example that you guys have talked about in your videos is how the classic Let's Play style is not really working anymore, and it's very, very niche. It's not a trending topic anymore. So what I've done, and other people have done as well, is within your Let's Play content, you can try and, you know, answer questions. You can try and dig into another niche in your Let's Play. So what I do now is I do my tutorials, but I also do a Let's Play where the same goal is there, trying to help people learn things in Minecraft. And doing it that way, it's the same audience. It's just a little bit different. But there's people that are doing, you know, full out 40-minute Let's Play, little editing, then tutorials on the same channel. And I think that's where you go wrong.
So do you feel like for your videos that you know what series is what, but maybe a new viewer to your channel wouldn't realize that they're watching a channel that has all these different series and all these different things you're doing?
I definitely can see that. And something I've done to combat that is in the thumbnails, I make a concerted effort to have a little bit of a difference. So for my Let's Play content, even though the title might be tutorial sounding, it might even look like a tutorial in the thumbnail, but I make sure I have, for one, my face on it, and two, a little title pop up at the top that says survival series, which is my way of saying Let's Play. And on tutorials, I don't do that. I make sure my face is off it, so the viewer just knows you're just going to get this content and the video's done.
The strategy we talk about a lot, because you're doing exactly how I've always said in videos to do it. You know, if you're gonna chase a game like Minecraft, something so big and popular, your Let's Plays. Maybe you don't agree with this because you're trying to draw in a new crowd. But do you still feel like your Let's Plays are for your returning viewers rather than drawing in new ones?
Absolutely. On the Let's Plays, even though I'm trying to help people with a tutorial within that, there's still plenty of opportunity after that's over within the video for me to just mess around, have fun, and be entertaining. So on those videos, I'm trying to reach that new audience, but anyone who's a returning viewer, they're going to know, all right, once this 5-minute tutorial's over, he's going to go do fun stuff and, you know, be funny.
Do you get a lot of new viewers on those videos that are marketed as Let's Plays?
I'm actually pretty new to this. I've started doing this strategy about, I want to say, a month or two ago. But so far, it's been good. I've gotten a lot of, I want to say there's been a lot more new viewers faster on these videos than in the past when I didn't do it to this style.
Because that's the dream, right? Like, when you make a tutorial, I don't know about you, but it always took me a lot of research. Whenever I'm making a tutorial about anything, I'm doing, most of my time is spent researching. It's not so much the recording and the editing. And when you're just playing the game, You may have a goal in mind for that episode, for example, but the game throws stuff at you and you react to it. And that's like the fun part. And you don't have to like plan as much for that. So I would say, and feel free to speak to this, but do you feel like you're kind of getting to live the dream there a little bit?
Absolutely. Like that is, you just nailed it. The best way for me to make my content is by just being myself, being my, you know, goofy personality, and just engaging my viewers. Now for tutorials, a lot of people, you know, they're just trying to find a question. They want the answer. They don't want any of you in your face. So when I can kind of leverage that and have people find me for tutorials, but maybe they also like my personality and they'll stick around, it's the best because you get the best of both worlds. You get the views and you might get the returning viewer as well.
Do your tutorials primarily bring in views from search then?
Absolutely. That's like the number one way I get my search views is from tutorials.
It's hard to quantify, but do you then feel like the strategy's working? Like the search-driven content is bringing in viewers that actually stick around after they get the answer to their question? Or do you find that it's not the case?
So on scale, it's hard to say, but I can tell you from the comments I get from the people that really seem to enjoy it, they do speak to that. They say, I really liked how engaging you were, how funny you were, you know, at this moment. And they're people that are brand new. They're not subscribed. They're not, you know, they're not returning viewers. So again, at scale, it's hard to say, but from what I've seen, it really is working well.
Well, going back to the mistakes from a while ago, that was my fault. your first one was people jump topics very easily. I have always attributed this to maybe a little burnout on the maybe original game they chose. Kind of grass is greener syndrome kind of kicks in, you know, like I do like this game, but my friend over there seems to be having a lot of fun in that other new game. Is there another mistake you see commonly?
Yeah, I would say the lack of engaging thumbnails. And I know that's much easier said than, you know, making a good thumbnail. But I look at it like this. A lot of people, when they're new, they look at their favorite creators and their thumbnails, which is usually their brand. It's their face making like some shocked face with little to do with the game in the background. And they look at that and say, okay, I'll do that too, because they have all these views. But really, if you're not well known, you need to showcase what the video is about. No one cares about who you are yet. So a lot of people, they'll have like their face as the whole thumbnail, or they'll have just like some generic Minecraft Let's Play screen in the background. And it's not helping any new people understand who you are and what you do.
Are you still making your own thumbnails at the moment, Farzi?
I am. That's my favorite part about YouTube right now, is making thumbnails.
Yeah. Oh. Interesting, because I was going to ask, do you think you will outsource thumbnail creation at some point in the future? And it sounds like no currently. But I guess it's that kind of essence of, first of all, you got to find out whether you enjoy making video content. I always feel as if that's the number one thing for a creator before you start to build an audience, a community, etc., etc. And then once you've done that, and once you start to earn some income, then you can start to outsource the things that either consume too much time or you don't enjoy doing. And it sounds like editing was one of them, but you very much want to keep the thumbnail game in your own hands, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, right now, I'm really fine with keeping it in my own hands, because as I said, I enjoy it. It's really rewarding when I make a thumbnail, like when the finished thing looks really engaging and colorful. I love the whole process of making them. But that's not to say at some point, if I was getting busier, had more of a condensed upload schedule, I wouldn't want to outsource that. But I would definitely say at this point in my YouTube career, thumbnails is the most fun I have. Just thinking of ideas, thinking of how a prospective viewer will see it, what will catch their eye. I love the whole science behind that stuff.
And then just as a creative process question here, do you make the thumbnail first and the title first before you make the video, or do you make the video and then do the thumbnail and the title? Because the thumbnails look as if they're of a very high standard. I'm guessing, you know, you're probably maybe spending 30 minutes to an hour on each of these.
Yeah. So how my creative process goes, I think of the video topic in general. Then I go record it. After that, I think of a compelling title that will then match the thumbnail, which I do last.
The second mistake was thumbnails that are not engaging. We see it all the time within our community. By the way, just a quick shout out to our VidIQ Discord, because whole community of people in there. And you, I don't know if anyone's ever tried this, but if you're creating a thumbnail and you have any doubts, getting someone else to look at it and kind of help you brainstorm ways it could be better never hurts. And you know, we have a whole community for that. It can be super, super helpful. Do you have yet another mistake you're noticing that newer creators are making?
I do, but it's very broad, and this goes for everyone, including you guys and myself, and that is just the lack of patience. A lot of people, and my viewers included, they'll ask me, like, Farzi, how do you grow your channel so quickly? And they could even have good content, but if you're not willing to understand that this takes time, you're not going to grow in a couple of weeks, unless you're, you know, some crazy channel, you're not going to grow really fast. So you need to understand, like, hey, I'm going to put my head down. I'm going to work at this. I'm going to get better. I'm going to do my research. But if you don't have that patience and that understanding, you're going to get frustrated. We've all been there, but it's really important to articulate that.
So Rob, I have kind of a treat for you here. Farzi isn't just a YouTuber who plays Minecraft on one YouTube channel. Farzi started a Minecraft Shorts channel.
I noticed. And
yes, I'm sure, since Shorts is the topic of the year and it comes up in almost every podcast we do, I was certain you'd want to dig into this a little bit.
Yeah, so I see that he started a Shorts channel using a Shorts icon. Very inventive there. I think he stole that idea off us.
Like the shorts that people wear.
Yeah, literally the shorts that people wear. So you started in October 2020, and you got about 6.5 million views. So it looks as if it was start doing well. I've noticed sort of in the last couple of weeks, so each of these shorts are getting barely 200 views, if not less. I've been joking with people for a few months now. Like, if you want to start a channel on YouTube, just start a Minecraft Shorts channel, because you're guaranteed 1,000 subscribers within a space of a couple of weeks. And I say it tongue in cheek, and that's sort of kind of no longer the truth anyway. But like, what has your experience been with Shorts, given that whenever I go onto YouTube Shorts, one in every, I'd say, five videos is a Minecraft Shorts of some description?
Well, it's definitely competitive now. And I mean, we all saw this coming. You guys made videos on it saying, like, if you're going to do shorts, do it before this date when the shorts, you know, camera gets released to everyone. And I did that. I followed you guys' advice. And as you saw early on, it worked out great. I got a lot of views, a lot of traction. I even had like a nice little plug system where I, at the end of each short, said, hey, come to my main channel, and got some views that way. But I want to attribute this to the competition, but I also can't say it with certainty. But over time, I've just lost my traction on it. And I was telling Dan this the other day, that channel is kind of dead to me. And I was almost at the point where I wanted to just delete it. I'm still kind of debating that in my head. But to me, Shorts have lost its value. And I think that's because of the very, very increased competition on YouTube for Minecraft Shorts.
What kind of shorts were you putting together on that channel?
So when I first did them, when I had the most success, I was making my own shorts from scratch. So I'd think of some really simple Minecraft tutorial or idea, and I'd make a separate short on that. And that did good. But over time, and this could be part of the reason why my channel kind of dipped down, I started to think of how can I leverage my time and, you know, save some energy. So I started taking clips from my main channel. Now, I didn't do it lazily. I did it in a way where I had engaging clips. I picked the best of the best, helpful clips, funny clips, whatever. But since I did that change to clipping my full videos as opposed to making full shorts on their own, that's when a big dip started to happen.
You took the easy way out a little bit, but it's the way that a lot of creators out there have been recommending you tackle shorts. And I'm going to try not to go off on a tangent here, but I've been seeing a lot of the question comes up a lot. Should I make a separate channel for shorts? Which is what you did. And to me, if you're going to be taking clips of something that happened in a longer video and turning it into a short, I kind of feel like that's a better reason to start a second channel, because those will attract a totally different audience. Whereas your current audience is going to see those shorts come in and they'll be like, well, I already saw that. That's not really new to me. But the way you were doing it is when I would probably say, maybe there's not a need for that second channel. I know at the time you felt strongly about the second channel. What you're just saying at this point it's not worth your time. Have you noticed the views have dipped down, or is it something else?
On the Shorts channel, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, the views have dipped down a lot. And it's not from, you know, my core audience not watching as much, but I just feel like YouTube has picked it up less. And that could be for many reasons, but it has not hit the shelf as many times as, you know, it was in the past.
Right. So you're saying it's not hitting the shelf at all?
On a lot of them, no. Sometimes I get it for like an hour or so, and you'll see there's some shorts that have like a couple thousand views. But for the ones with like the hundreds, like maybe, you know, 200 to 500 views, that's all just my core audience from my main channel.
Oh, wow. Okay. So those videos just don't get tested on the short shelf. Just to clarify for anyone out there listening, there's a moment with YouTube Shorts where when you upload a new one, it kind of does nothing for a while. And then I always kind of consider it the test. Like YouTube takes it and puts it in front of some folks and watches how it does and then decides from there it's fate. And so what you're saying is that's not happening to a number of your shorts at all.
Yes, the time of my shorts, you know, being on the shelf, being in YouTube's good graces, is a lot less than before, and I mean a lot less.
So I would, if I were you, I'd probably make that call too. I mean, this also comes down to focus too, right? Like when you start a second channel, you want to give it some attention, you want to make sure that it has that focus, and if you're worried about what your most recent short is doing while you're also trying to plan ahead for videos on your main channel, you're kind of pulling focus away. Is that part of your decision, or am I just making something up?
Well, that's not for me, but you brought up a good point, Dan. A lot of people don't have editors. I'm fortunate enough to outsource some stuff. If you're someone that has a main channel that you want to grow, do you really have time to do a separate shorts channel? And if it's not growing, is it worth your time? So for me, it's okay. Like if I didn't delete it, it wouldn't be a big nuisance to me. But for most creators who don't outsource their editing, that's a big time investment, and you need any extra time you possibly can if you're trying to do this full time.
Right. We talked to BlockFacts recently. And for anyone who doesn't know, this is a Minecraft Shorts channel that got 2 million subscribers doing Minecraft Shorts very consistently. And it was literally facts about blocks in Minecraft. That was their whole thing. And he noticed something that I myself have had experience with too. He noticed that eventually he was getting views not from the short shelf, but a lot of his views started coming from browse features, which to me, when I saw this happen, it was a signal that returning viewers are watching these now. It's people who have seen you in the past. They're getting recommended shorts on a different space in YouTube, and they're not technically a shorts viewer, meaning that YouTube didn't need to test that video on the shelf. Did that ever happen on your channel? Anything like that?
Not that I can think of. I can't remember a time where I had a lot of browse. No, not that I can think of.
Dang it. Okay.
Sorry to disappoint.
It's all right. I think we'd be having a much different conversation if it did, because you probably wouldn't be thinking about putting down your shorts channel. My strategy to share, this is what BlockFacts did, is he started making long form content on his, what started out to be a shorts channel. And these videos are 10 minutes in length and more, and they're doing excellent. I would say very, very well. I know the couple he did got up to like just about 1 million views. I haven't checked lately. I don't know if Rob has.
I just checked now. I think they're all like the 2 million. They're performing as well. And so dollop on multiples of watch time and actual ad revenue. It's probably gone from earning a couple of dollars a day to hundreds, if not thousands of dollars a day.
Yeah, it's crazy though, because you guys probably started close to the same time when you were uploading your shorts, and there it is again. Like we've almost come full circle with the luck conversation. You know, was part of the success there, just timing and getting in YouTube's good graces. I certainly hope not. I think that mentality is not what folks should be considering when they're making a YouTube channel. Any final thoughts for folks listening out there?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I would say if anyone's listening here and they want to make a gaming channel, just be patient, go in your own lane. Don't chase trends. You know, every trend you see, just do what you like doing and do it for a long time. And as you do that, you will evolve. You will learn some of the tricks and, you know, you'll evolve a little bit better, but don't go all over the place, different trends, different games. Just stick to your thing. That's my best piece of advice for this whole podcast.
All right. Farzi, thank you so much for joining us. Where can folks find you?
I am on YouTube at the name Farzi.
All right. Thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tube Talk, brought to you by VidIQ. Head over to vidIQ.com/tubetalk for today's show notes and previous episodes. Enjoy the rest of your video making day.